Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Into the playbook for a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. I am John Rook. Welcome to the program. Game week 2, Patriots at the Minnesota Vikings. Of course, as I'm sure you're well aware, Patriots open up with their first two on the road before they get the home game next week against Oakland. In fact, 3 of the first 4 on the road. And I have to admit, this is a vastly underrated part of the schedule. Nobody really says, oh, wow, such and such team has a huge chunk of schedule to bite off early. You always look at the middle part, and especially you look at the end of the season and say, wow, that's a tough stretch. Hopefully they can, you know, round third and head for home. Here we are mixing sports metaphors now. But no one really takes a good hard look at the first part of the schedule. Why? Because everybody thinks everything is coming up roses at the first part of the season. Everybody's 0-0 to start the season. And even at 0-1, you're not done for, which I would also concur with. What I think Sunday's loss has done in part to New England, to Patriots fans, certainly to the perspective of this football team throughout the entire country, has to be the fact that just look at the schedule. Opening up with your first 4 on the road. That's a hard thing to do. The Patriots were not given any favors. Now, you say, well, it was at Miami and it's going to be at Minnesota and those two teams are not exactly world beaters and, you know, maybe Kansas City after Oakland, but, you know, well, okay. I can understand why you'd say that based on past history. But if you truly wipe the slate clean every year, which I think in theory we're all supposed to do. I mean, again, everybody starts 0-0, right? So if you wipe the slate clean and you try not to go on recent past history, then why wouldn't you consider the opening month or 6 weeks or so of the schedule as being one of the toughest parts of your season? Especially when you add to the fact that all things are brand new. You've had some turnover. You've had some upheaval. You've sent some veterans on their way. You're welcoming in some new bodies. You've had changes in the coaching staff. You know, things turn over. I think the beginning of a season is vastly underrated in terms of what to expect. We all think we know what to expect. And yet last week, none of us saw that coming. Nobody. And like I said yesterday, and like I wrote about in the column this week on Patriots.com, you know, outside of South Florida, who saw that coming on Sunday? Nobody. The players out on the field who are just now getting ready to come in for the locker room, they didn't see it coming. They didn't expect it. Clearly the coaches didn't see that coming. As Andy said, and you don't agree with Andy a whole heck of a lot here, but he said, hey, maybe you just had a bad game plan. Maybe the coach had a bad game plan. I happen to concur with that. I thought it was a lousy game plan. I think maybe, you know, what you have to realize is, okay, you take a look at Miami in the preseason or you think you know about Miami from last year, but as I said yesterday, a couple of times here on the program, you got to realize who the coaches are and who the players are and realize that things are probably going to change from one year to the next. Add to that the fact that Miami traditionally, they have started out well before. And they typically fade toward the end of a season. This year, this week, that's no exception. It's no exception. So I open up today only by saying, look, let's not look past each week now. I mean, it's fun to start the year thinking, okay, you're going to be 8-1 at the break, or, you know, you need to be 13-3 to get a bye, or, you know, it's going to be the Patriots in Denver in the AFC Championship again. That's all fun in games, and, you know, it's kind of cool to play with and gives us something to look forward to perhaps. But now push has come to shove. Now we have football on the table, and now the Patriots have been hit in the mouth by a team that wants nothing more than to hit them in the mouth again. Now, New England won't play Miami again until December. Yes, it will be here. It will be here in Foxborough, but my guess is that in December, when those two teams meet again, the situation will be vastly different, and yet it could also be the same. Think about that for a second. All right, so it's the Minnesota Vikings this week as part of this, you know, opening salvo, this opening schedule for the Patriots that certainly now appears to be much tougher than any of us had given credit for it being tough. When you open with three of your first four on the road, I don't care how good you are, it's difficult for any team. And in a league that stresses parity, especially early in the year before your strengths have a chance to take hold, before your newcomers have a chance to become veterans, before your veterans, you know, have a chance to be all pros, you know, you don't know what you have. It's kind of like the, you know, you hear the adage in baseball that, you know, in a 162-game schedule, even the games in April count. Even the first 2-3 weeks of the season count because they still count on the record, even though some people tend to dismiss those because it's so early in the season. How could it possibly have an effect on September baseball? Well, I would argue that every game counts, especially in football when you only have 16 games to play. There's no way that you can look past the opening few weeks. And when you have three of your first four away from home, you'd better have your chin strap on very tight. Maybe that's a bit of a football euphemism here, but frankly, I just don't think the Patriots had their chin straps on very tight this past week. And it showed in the result. They were fortunate in the first half. They got slapped around in the second half. They did not respond to that. And now that they've, you know, been sent home with their tails between their legs, and they're out there trying to work out these problems this week before taking on a very good Minnesota team, well, we're going to find out how they respond soon enough. Won't take long. There's some familiarity between the sides here. We'll run through some of the who's and the what's and the why fours and the how's and all that kind of stuff between the two teams, because you don't really get a chance to play teams from the NFC North all that often. Well, once every 4 years. You get a chance to go to Minnesota once every 8 years. Kind of unusual that it's going to be 8 years before the Patriots get a chance to play in the Vikings' new stadium, because for this year and next, they're, you know, in their home away from home, playing where the University of Minnesota plays, since the Metrodome is no more, and they're building a new facility in Minneapolis. So it's a bit of a switch here for the Patriots. This is Minnesota's home opener after winning on the road and winning on the road impressively at an albeit wounded St. Louis team, but nevertheless, anytime you can go on the road and you can spank somebody by 34-6, that ought to grab your attention. It grabbed mine, especially during the day. It definitely grabbed mine. So, what is it about Minnesota? What do we know about Minnesota? Well, first and foremost, AFC East scheduling partner with the NFC North this year as part of the NFL schedule rotation. Over the past 12 seasons, we can tell you the Patriots have an 11-game winning streak against teams from the AFC North. 11 in a row. Anybody think that has a chance of being snapped this week? You're talking about, you know, Minnesota, Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay. Since realignment in 2002, the only loss against the current teams in the NFC North was back in 2002, losing here to the Green Bay Packers. in the previous 2 years that the Patriots and or the AFC East played NFC North teams. Just to give you a little historical perspective here. Patriots went 4-0 against the North Division in 06. They went 4-0 against the North Division in 2010. And they won 3 in a row against North Division teams after that loss back in 02 to the Packers. So 11 straight wins over North Division teams. The win streak is the longest current streak any NFL team has against another division. Now that speaks to the Patriots' dominance. It speaks to, you know, the successes that the Patriots have had over the last decade plus now, 12 years in all. When you go back to three rotations ago against North Division teams, it tells you where the Patriots have been. It does not tell you where they're going. It does not include the fact that they failed miserably in South Florida this past Sunday. As we all know, each season brings along a different team. It brings similar expectations. You and I have those expectations. Patriots fans everywhere have expectations that this team, this franchise, will continue its run of success. Because why? Well, because they just have. They've done it every year after Bill Belichick's first year here in New England in 2000. They've been above 500 every year. They've been in the playoffs every year but two. In one of the years that they missed the playoffs, they won 11 games behind the Vikings now starting quarterback, Matt Cassel, and missed out on the playoffs on the last day of the season. But still, a very representative season when you consider you lose your heart and your soul in week one in Tom Brady that year. So, expectations are that New England should pick right up where they left off. And yet, you've got the Minnesota Vikings here who now are quarterbacked by Matt Cassel, coached by Mike Zimmer, who was a part of the Cincinnati Bengals coaching staff a year ago, as a defensive coordinator. Does anybody remember what happened with the Patriots and the Bengals a year ago? They lost 13-6. And allowing the Patriots no touchdowns in basically being the architect of that game plan was Mike Zimmer. So I don't think they're going to fear New England. I don't think anybody really fears anyone in the NFL these days. But certainly Minnesota is not going to fear New England coming into Minneapolis this weekend. There's not going to be any fear factor involved at, what is it called, TCF Bank Stadium. By the way, only seats 52,000. I read that earlier today, and I'm like, wow, that's really small. And then I realized, oh, that's because it's University of Minnesota Stadium. And that, oh, now I remember. Yeah, okay, they're, you know, the whole new stadium deal where the Vikings might move to, I don't know, San Antonio, which I know had been rumored a few years ago when Red McCombs was the owner. And I worked for Red McCombs years ago in San Antonio when I was a part of the Spurs, and he was a rather large-sized and still is businessman in South Texas. Being that as it may, has nothing really to do with what we're talking about today. But I thought that 52,000 stood out like, wow, that's really a small stadium for NFL standards. And I realized, oh, yeah, it's University of Minnesota Stadium. Now, let's put that aside for a second, because the Vikings have sold out the game, which should not come as a surprise. Until you realize that it's an outdoor stadium. And so you're kind of wondering, well, clearly the weather is not going to be what it was this last week in South Florida, and the weather's not going to be probably what it will be, say in November or December in Minneapolis, when you're liable to get below zero temperatures outdoors, because the Vikings have been indoors at the old Metrodome for the past, 32 years. So it's a different environment. It's going to be, I think it'll be exciting for them, A, because it is Minnesota's home opener, B, because they're going to be outdoors in Minneapolis for the first time in more than three decades against the New England Patriots, who have ruled over their division for the better part of the last decade plus. No one's going to fear anybody. No one's going to be afraid of anything. And that's what the Patriots are stepping into. This may be, because of what I mentioned to open up the program today, The fact that there's not going to be any fear. The fact that the Patriots are opening up the season with three games out of their first four on the road, which is a tough chore for anybody to tackle, even if you are a Super Bowl contender. And I put quotation marks around that because I think before the season started, everyone, and that includes those in South Florida, everyone considered the Patriots a preseason Super Bowl contender. Everybody. And they may still very well be. I'm not writing off the season by any stretch. You got, 15 games left to play. That's a long way to go, which is why, I got a ton of tweets yesterday, several emails, a few phone calls yesterday imploring fans not to jump off the ship. It's the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard. It's one game. Yeah, we can identify problems, but let's give this team a chance to correct it. And I concur with that opinion. It's kind of silly to jump off the ship and say, oh, woe is us, we're going to stink, based on one half's performance. One half of one game's performance. And we're going to, and the rest of the season is washed out, gone. No, that's just dumb. But I know a lot of fans tend to, seize the moment and emphasize the present. And this is where it really requires a little more of a big picture point of view. And that's obviously what we try to do here in the playbook, is give you perspective as well as other opinions. And I'd certainly would like to hear some of that opinion from you today here on the program. But before we get into a lot of that, that's why I think this week of practice, based on what I opened up the show with, as I started to say, this week of practice could very well be the most important week of the entire season. Now, I'm not just blowing smoke up, the skirts, and I'm not being a doomsayer or anything like that here. This could very well be, and may still go down as, one of the most important weeks of practice all year long for a couple of reasons. Number one, we all know, and we all saw, if you watched the game on Sunday, we know where the problems were. It's really not rocket science. Offensive line was very shaky. Defensive line didn't stop anybody. Linebackers didn't stop anybody. Offense sputtered and came to a grinding halt in the second half. Couldn't move the ball on anybody. Silly penalties, bad decisions, no adjustments. Do we need to go on? No. So because of all of the maladies that we came up with on Sunday, and we nitpicked over here ad nauseum yesterday, and undoubtedly we'll continue to nitpick a little bit throughout the remainder of this week because it left that kind of a deep impression, I think, on all of us, that you've got today, tomorrow, Friday to really work these things out, and then you get on a plane Saturday to go play a game on Sunday, and you're on the road again against a team that's going to be, it's Pete Carroll always likes to say, jacked and pumped. And team is going to be feeling its oats a little bit. They're riding high, coming off a big win. Guys at PFW a short while ago were talking about how, hey, and the Patriots were saying earlier, both Belichick and Brady were saying earlier, hey, this is a 5-0 Vikings team because they went 4-0 in the preseason. And then they won resoundingly against a wounded St. Louis team, 34-6, on the road this past Sunday. And you're kind of like, wow, okay, so we're supposed to pay attention to that? Again, let me reiterate, in case, you don't know enough about my background or you haven't heard me before today or what have you, preseason means nothing. Nothing. My best Sergeant Schultz impression. Nothing. Doesn't mean anything. Now, I would say you're more likely to be taken seriously as a good team, as a contender, yada, yada, if you go 4-0 as opposed to going 0-4. But I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago in the View From Above column here on Patriots.com, and I'll repeat it again here. Remember the Detroit Lions back in 08. They went 4-0, and then they proceeded to go 0-16 in the regular season. So just because you go 4-0 in the preseason, that's not necessarily a precursor of good things to come for the extent of the regular season. Now, Minnesota certainly got off to a great start because it's a road win, and it's a resounding road win, whether you think St. Louis is all there or not. They lost their quarterback in the preseason, and they're liable to struggle much of the rest of the year. They're liable to. It's certainly possible. Nevertheless, the margin of victory being a road game is significant. Now, we don't know if Minnesota will end up 7-9, 8-8, 10-6, 13-3. Nobody knows right now. But certainly they got off to a good start, and that ought to grab your attention more than a 4-0 preseason record should grab your attention. And I think even Vikings fans, and I hope that we have some listening today, and I encourage your participation, and I encourage your 2 cents worth here on the program. If you're a Vikings fan and you're listening, and you're sampling us, and you're trying us out, welcome. But you can't be taking 4-0 in the preseason seriously. You can't be. Just like the Patriots don't take 2-2 seriously, and you know, I don't. The Dolphins had a great preseason at 3-1 too, and I don't think they're taking that seriously either. Does it have something to do with momentum? It might. But no team shows all of its capabilities in the preseason, and that includes the Vikings. You'd probably, like I said, rather be 4-0 than 0-4, but I just don't know whether or not it makes a difference. In fact, I would say no. It doesn't make a difference. All right, so you have a little background now into the NFC North, into the Patriots' streak going into this game against the Minnesota Vikings. We know of the particulars in the Vikings lineup that should be taken seriously by the Patriots. One of those being, of course, Adrian Peterson, a running back who, for my money, is the best running back in the NFL. There's a little shout-out to you strippers and your Oklahoma Sooners. just because, you know, here's a guy that's returned to top form even after a devastating knee injury. And he didn't have the greatest debut last week, but then again, he did not need to have that kind of a debut. 75 yards rushing on, what, 21 carries, I think it was. But he was effective. So he's probably chomping at the bit just a little bit to break out. My guess is that the Vikings look at Patriots game film this week, they'll probably be salivating. Especially if the Patriots come through with a 3-4 front, an undersized 3-4 that was lost, totally lost, against Miami. So you know what you have there. You know a little of what you have in Matt Castle only because he was your quarterback here 6-7 years ago. Taking over for Tom Brady when Brady went down, led the Patriots to an 11-win regular season, even though they did not get to the playoffs. But fact of the matter is, no one here really thinks poorly about Matt Castle at all. He went on, tried to, you know, do his thing in Kansas City, had mixed results there before Alex Smith moved in. And I think most Vikings fans, and correct me if I'm wrong, Vikings fans, but most Vikings fans probably feel like he's there for a short term anyway until Teddy Bridgewater, the first-round draft pick from Louisville, is ready to take over the heir apparent at quarterback in Minnesota. I saw Teddy play extensively during his college career at Louisville, covering a lot of Big East and last year American Athletic Conference football games. And, you know, everybody always said, Teddy has small hands. Teddy has small hands. It's amazing what he can do with such small hands. Well, it doesn't matter, size of his hand. What does that have to do with the grip of the football, maybe? I don't know. All I know is the guy's pretty accurate. The guy's very athletic. And I knew somebody would give him a shot, whether he was late first round or early second or wherever he fell. He was a guy that, you know, fundamentally looked like he could be a sticker for somebody and a guy who could be a solid pro quarterback for someone. I liked Teddy Bridgewater long term at least as much as I like Johnny Manziel and probably better. Has nothing to do with the fact that Manziel's an Aggie and I'm a Longhorn either. Has nothing to do with it. Here's a guy that knows how to drop back, stay in the pocket, move into the pocket, not necessarily have to dart around, but he certainly got the athletic ability to do it. So when it comes Teddy Bridgewater's time, I'm sure he'll be ready to go. And if the Vikings struggle this year, while Matt Castle is quarterbacking, don't be surprised to see Bridgewater move in. I don't think that's going to happen this week. I think the Patriots need to concern themselves with Castle. The fact remains is that Castle probably, in fact, I definitely think he would give them their best chance to win this week. Because you know what, you know, the Patriots' track record is against rookie quarterbacks, especially under Bill Belichick. wrote about that a couple of weeks ago, and I have no reason to think otherwise. Castle gives Minnesota the best chance to win this week. So you got Castle as a known entity, relatively known, getting to play his old team for a first time as the head guy, as the lead guy, as the number one guy in Minnesota. And you got AD all day, Adrian Peterson at running back. You know who Mike Zimmer is. I mentioned that a little while ago as well, because of his defensive coordinator position at Cincinnati last year, and they basically throttled the Patriots a year ago, Cincinnati did. What else do you know about Minnesota that worries you? That's my number one question to you as a Pats fan today for this week. Rule out Castle, rule out Peterson, rule out even the coach. What else about the Minnesota team stands out to you as being effective, as being a threat, as being dangerous, as being someone that New England needs to pay attention to on either side of the football? This is sort of a learning lesson about the opposition today in the playbook. What do we know? What should we know about the Minnesota Vikings? Tell me what you know. Let's share it. Let's talk about it. Let's see if we can kick some things around. Email address is webradio@patriots.com. That's the same email address. Address hasn't changed. I'd love to hear from you. webradio@patriots.com. Telephone number is toll-free, 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500, P-A-T-S-500. Hit me up on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster. Got one here that I'm going to share real quick. Where are we? Well, yeah, this one from PD31 on Twitter says, based on last week, Peterson is, you know, talking about, you know, who's going to be a game changer. And that's the question I tweeted out earlier today. Who's a game changer for Minnesota? That's along the same lines of the question I just asked you. Who's a game changer other than Peterson and Castle and even the head coach? Who concerns you the most about Minnesota? And he says it's still Peterson. He'll run all over the Pats D all game. That may very well be. But is there somebody else that concerns you? On Facebook, it's John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. That's how you find me. Submit the friend request if you haven't done so, and then you can post to the Facebook page or you can chat using the Facebook chat function during the show and ask your questions that way. So there are four different ways to get a hold of us here on the program. Phone, email, Twitter, Facebook. Who's a game breaker for Minnesota? Who else besides the aforementioned players and coach concerns you about the Minnesota Vikings? And along those same lines, because I love to do this whenever we play a team that we only play them once every 4 to 8 years. And again, you're only on the road against Minnesota or anybody in the NFC North once every 8 years. We kind of look at it from a road trip point of view. Give me one good thing you know about Minnesota. Give me one good thing you know about Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Twin Cities area. Give me one good thing we should all know in Patriots Nation about Minnesota. That and a game breaker. 855-PATS-500, webradio@patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. All right, I'll give you a couple of moments to get your thoughts together. We're in the playbook here for a Wednesday. We'll have plenty of guests to talk more about the Vikings coming up tomorrow, including our own Russell S. Baxter from ProFootballGuru.com. We'll talk more about that as the show continues today. But now you take center stage, so it's time to climb on board inside the playbook.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of Patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on Patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Yeah, baby. Tomorrow here in the Playbook. In the opening hour, Brian Murphy of the St. Paul Pioneer Press will join us specifically to get into the Vikings. Of course, we'll be followed by Russell Baxter, Pro Football Guru, ProFootballGuru.com, in the 3 o'clock hour on Thursday. And then Dan Fouts, yes, the one and only Dan Fouts, will be the analyst on the CBS television broadcast team for the Patriots at the Vikings on Sunday afternoon. Dan Fouts will join us as well in the 3 o'clock hour tomorrow, mañana, Thursday. So appointment listening in the Playbook for you on Thursday. In the meantime, Patriots, of course, playing at TCF Bank Stadium. That's the home of the Minnesota Golden Gophers, as I mentioned to you earlier, as the Vikings will be playing there this year and next year while their new stadium is being built. In case you were wondering, and I actually was wondering this a little while ago, last time the Patriots played in a college football stadium, which was a facility, of course, that's primarily built for a college team, that was in 2002 when New England played the Chicago Bears in Champaign, Illinois. That was the home of the Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. And that's while Soldier Stadium was being renovated in Chicago. So it's been 12 years since that has happened. Patriots' first visit to Minnesota was way back in 1974 when the Patriots played at the old Metropolitan Stadium, and the Patriots, by the way, won 17-14. So that was the last time the Patriots played outdoors in Minnesota, was 40 years ago. In 1974, the old Metropolitan Stadium, and the Patriots won the game 17-14. So a little more history, a little more food for thought, if you will, as you consider the matchup this weekend against the Vikings. One of the things that I asked as we open up for questions here and your comments is, give me one good thing about Minnesota. What do you know about Minnesota that you like? What's one good attribute that you know about, since we really don't know a lot about Minnesota? Patriots and the Patriot fans don't get a chance unless you're living there. Don't get a chance to go there or talk about it or you know, get involved with it very often, because you only face them once every 4 years. You only go there once every 8 years. That's why I said, give me one good thing about Minnesota that you know. Kevin, you're going to love this. Miss Robin sends me this note on Facebook. She says, the Mary Tyler Moore statue in Minneapolis.
Man, you are whipped, Rook.
Well, hey, I have one fan at least. Yeah! Yeah, all right, to the phones, and then we get to your emails. Eldridge in North Carolina, you get to lead it off in the Playbook today. What's up, Eldridge?
Thanks a lot, John. Hey, man, how you doing? Minnesota?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a trucker. I done rode through there a couple of times. I like the way it looks at night, but I never had a chance to stop and visit. But it looks pretty nice, behavioral riding there in the wintertime because of the snow.
Do you ride through there in the wintertime, Eldridge, at all?
No, not at all. I refuse to load. Not at all.
Wow.
Not at all. I'm not, because they close down the highway. And if you're somewhere that's just coming down, if you don't find a truck stop, you're hooked. You're hooked on the side of the road, man.
Wow. How about that?
No way.
Wow.
No way.
Okay.
But for the team-wise,
yeah,
we got to worry about, we should have been our number one pick, Cordell Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
The punt returner, kick returner.
Mm-hmm.
They use him like they use Percy Harvin, except he's bigger, faster, and stronger. And we ain't got nobody in secondary that'll run with him, and not including Revis. If Revis think Mike Wallace was fast, wait till you get to Cordell Patterson. And he's a route runner also.
Yeah.
So him, then you gotta worry about Rudolph, the tight end, and their defense. They front four, like Brady said, can put pressure on without sending the linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why the guy from Cincinnati went there. Because he had a pretty good team in Harris. You already know what he had. And AD, if they don't tackle, hit them tackling sleeves and dummies this week, AD going to run them all day. All day, every day.
Yeah.
They ain't going to bring them down.
I think that has to be the major concern for Patriots fans everywhere. In all honesty, Eldridge, is being able to stop Peterson.
Yep, but only besides him, they also got Jennings on the outside, and they got the other younger receiver that's on the outside, the slot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, man, they loaded. All they needed was a quarterback, and they got two. Castle, I hated to see him go. I really did. But I knew it was this time he wanted to play instead of being a backup, but Bridgewater's pretty good too. It's like I said, just a matter of time. But I hate to see that. Hate to see that happen to Castle again. You know, have a good starting job and lose it behind another quarterback. Because I think he is a good starting quarterback.
Right. Okay. Mm. All right.
Okay. That's all I have for you. Thanks, John.
All right, Eldridge. Thank you. Good points to get started with there. Cordarrelle Patterson, I think, certainly has to be the guy that I feel like we'll probably get most of the mention. Cav sends me this tweet at JR Broadcaster on Twitter again. He says, Cordarrelle Patterson scares me. Revis will have to bring his A game. No doubt about that. To me, he's the one game breaking piece of the puzzle. Guy that has ability to do that, that beyond what I've already talked about is a guy that can do severe damage. And you're going to have to watch him coming around the edge. Anthony in New Mexico, to that end, emails, what do you think about Revis staying on the left side instead of the following the best receiver on the other team? And do you think his play is slipping, or does it still have to do with the ACL injury? I don't think his play is slipping at all, Anthony. I don't know what you might have been looking at this last week against Miami. But, you know, he actually did okay. I mean, he defensed, I think, two or three. I think he gave up two completions. I don't think his play is slipping at all. I think everybody else around him failed to bring their game to a certain level, and I think that's why, by comparison, you probably think, oh, well, he didn't play very well, because the entire defense kind of stunk it up. My guess would be that Patterson's one of those guys that he's going to end up having to follow just a bit. Chad from the ATL says, can you tell me how the Broncos were able to get DeMarcus Ware, T.J. Ward, and Aqib Talib? Why did the Pats only acquire Revis and Browner? This is non-sarcastic because I'm not sure what the differences were between the salary caps. Were the Pats just not interested in getting a veteran pass rusher like Ware to complement Chandler Jones, or a safety like T.J. Ward? Seeing as how we struggle in those areas, I guess I'm just jealous of the Broncos' offseason pickups. Well, you know, again, it's a matter of thinking what you have is equipped to do the job and assigning a certain salary to the particular position. And the Patriots knew that if they were going to sign somebody like Ware, they're going to have to shell out a, you know, bunch of money that they weren't willing to put out. I think it's pretty simple. You know, the Patriots are relatively frugal when it comes to, you know, giving money to veteran players that are on the downside of their careers. Kind of like the whole new attitude that the Boston Red Sox have taken. If you follow the Red Sox at all, if you're a New England sports fan, you know that, you know, hey, the Red Sox over the last few years, once a player turns 30, they're not signing anybody to a long-term deal. And I think that's really a byproduct and a trademark of what the Patriots have done for some time. Eric Scalavino from PFW has joined us again, coming in from the locker room, since the guys now seem to have decided on a 2 to 2:45 Eastern time locker room appearance for the media. So it's kind of taking you out of our fold. So we appreciate
it's a conspiracy.
Your, I know.
We were doing too
We were. I miss having you at the start of the show, Ian.
Yeah. I miss being on the show.
So what were the guys talking about in the locker room today of importance to us at this stage?
Trying to put last week past them. Trying to improve in practice on the mistakes that they made in the game against Miami, and looking ahead to Minnesota, and just the general mood I got at practice and in the locker room today was very businesslike, very professional. Not a lot of hanging the heads, just, you know, admitting that they didn't play their best football, especially in the second half against Miami, and just trying to do something about it.
In your estimation,
not overreacting,
yeah,
but just taking it for what it was worth.
In your estimation, is this more of a lack of performance individually or lack of a game plan that gave the team a chance to win?
No, I think the game plan was working. I mean, they were up 20-10 at halftime. They were playing fairly well, I thought, in the first half. I thought they actually had, for the most part, control of the game, causing turnovers, playing with some energy and excitement on defense, making some, you know, going on a couple of long scoring drives on offense. I thought they were actually, you know, looking pretty good going into halftime. It was the second half when, you know, maybe the heat got to them a little bit, but I think for the most part, the 3-4 that they were running got exposed as being able to be run all over by the Dolphins. And the offense wasn't making the plays that they were making in the first half, and they didn't get any points on
the board. One thing that just really confused me, that I find that there's really not a whole lot of explanation for, and I'm sure was a point of contention with a lot of fans, was that, you know, Miami lost its starting linebacking core.
Yeah, early.
Lost them early in the game. Mm-hmm. They basically switched to a 52 defense, mm-hmm. playing just a couple, or, you know, five-man front, largely with two linebackers, mm-hmm. and dominated the game with that in the second half, without their regulars in the game. How does that happen?
Great adjustment, isn't it?
It was such a good adjustment, it floored the Patriots, and they couldn't get up off the floor.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It was a great adjustment by Miami's defensive coordinator. Great job. Got to give them credit for that. And the Patriots didn't sustain the momentum that they had in that first half. A lot of individual mistakes, particularly protecting Tom Brady, led to some costly disasters, giving up the ball. You know, that's going to lose your football games. And that's what happened. And still they had a chance in the fourth quarter. If Brady hits Edelman on that deep ball, we're talking about a different game. They were only down 3 at that point.
Mm-hmm. They retake the momentum.
Either they take the lead or they tie with a field goal, whatever. They
changed the momentum.
They changed the outcome of the game somehow by making that pass.
Right. Because you never know what an individual play can stop momentum in its tracks.
Sure. Right. So who knows? Who's to say that wouldn't have been a different outcome? Maybe they get a touchdown, different result. The defense comes out and holds them on the next play. Penalties, too, were piling up. I mean,
there's some really silly plays. And Minnesota put pressure on Brady and didn't get the roughing the quarterback calls. Or Miami, yeah. I mean, that didn't get the Patriots got the roughing the quarterback calls. They did not.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, these guys, the Patriots, they have to know how to hit guys. They have to know you can't go anywhere, you know, above the shoulders. Or mm-hmm. It's going to get called. And mm-hmm. that's what happened twice to Chandler Jones.
Right.
And those were big calls both times.
Yeah. The Hightower roughing the passer penalty, that was a tough one for me. When I, you know, going back and looking at it, too, for my column this week,
it seemed like he got him in the normal swing of momentum.
He got him in the normal swing of momentum, hard to stop. That was really
an iffy one.
But Chandler Jones
is he got the
no question
got hit in the head
no
twice.
Question. Anything from the neck up, you can't do it.
Doesn't matter how good it looks. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. So, what were the thoughts, and were there any thoughts, you know, emanating from the locker room on the Vikings and what their concerns are with the Vikings?
Sure, stout front as far as the offensive line is concerned. The Minnesota defense is a very big, stout front, just like Miami's was. And then obviously on offense, it's Peterson and Patterson are the big story there. So this is a challenge. This isn't a gimme game, John.
Ooh,
by any stretch.
Far from
this
it.
Is not a gimme game. I know a lot of people were, you know, we always like to look at the whole 16 weeks and tick off which ones we think are going to be wins and losses. I think a lot of people had at least 4-0, maybe
probably.
Even 5-0 going into this stretch. And mm-hmm. you can maybe kind of excuse the Miami one because they always play Miami tough, or Miami always plays them tough down there. But this is a legitimate cause for concern. The first time they would, dare I say, start 0-2 since Belichick's first year here.
Yeah.
When they went 0-4 before they won a game.
Didn't they start 0-2 in 0-1?
Let me check that right now for you. I thought they were 1-1.
Look at that. I thought I remember seeing that when I was reading earlier today that the last time they
started 0-2. Yeah, apologize.
It was
0-1.
Yeah,
it was 0-1. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
And
yep.
they did obviously yep. win a Super Bowl that year, but,
yeah.
You know,
different circumstances.
Different circumstances. We all remember week 2 is when Bledsoe got hurt. Brady came in.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Jets game, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's kind of what turned this whole franchise
around.
Yeah,
there was the first week, Cincinnati, they lost a tough game.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to play the Panthers that week.
Mm-hmm.
That was the weekend
moved.
Football got moved. So the third game was actually the second game.
Correct.
Jets, very emotional game. New York, New England, and all that. And Bledsoe gets hurt. And,
yeah.
And that's the
and
rest.
The rest, as they say, is history. Yeah. So,
but I have concerns about this game. I really do.
Without question, and I think there should be legitimate concerns about the game. And the question that I've asked our listeners, today has to do with, give me one thing you like about Minnesota, or that you know about Minnesota that you like, and number two, who's a game breaker? Who is a game changer? In other words, other than say Peterson and Matt Cassel, and so far it's overwhelming for Patterson.
Patterson, and I would say collectively that front. On defense, Minnesota, especially with the way the O-line is still not where it needs to be. Now, all that said, week two, I think, is the toughest week in the whole schedule to pick because you get results from week one that may not be indicative of what a team is really like.
Yep.
You know, Minnesota handled the Rams last week, but they handled the Rams without Sam Bradford and without Sean Hill for the most part.
Right.
They were down to their third quarterback.
Third quarterback, yeah.
So, yes, they put up some points. They looked pretty good, and they have skilled players on both sides of the ball. But a lot of times what you see in week one, the exact opposite happens in week two. So it's tough to automatically assume that this is going to be tougher than it is, but it's also a road game, second road game in a row. I like the way I've seen them respond so far in the attitude that they've brought. Very limited amount, obviously, of time since the turnaround from Miami, but this team historically doesn't go on two-game losing streaks. So I'm still holding out that much hope that they can correct enough of the mistakes that they made against Miami and have a different result this week in Minnesota.
Last two-game losing streak 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
2012.
Yep. Doesn't happen often with this team.
Right.
Okay. So I think they, at practice too, I felt like it was very businesslike. You know, a lot of times you go out to practice, there's some laughing, joking around, people feeling good. Didn't get any of that today. And they let us actually see some practice today, two periods actually after stretching. So
that's
a little bit of
insight.
It's mostly individual drills and some special teams work, but just more than it's better than just stretching.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm not complaining.
Okay.
About that.
All right. Well, before I let you, go upstairs and write and get all your good stuff ready for PFW, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least ask you for old time's sake about a word of the day, because somebody asked about it yesterday, and
man,
I said, you know what, I honestly, I don't know. I mean, he's not around. I don't get to see him anymore. I guess we're not good enough for him anymore.
No. I had been really excited, actually, because this offseason I compiled a huge new list of words that I couldn't wait to unveil. And then when the media schedule came out last week, I said,
that's right in the middle of the playbook.
Yeah. So
I know.
I mean, now that I was hoping that might have just been an aberration from last week, but looks like that's going to be the schedule. So we'll only
but I don't understand why their interview time is so far after the end of practice.
No, it's right after practice.
It's right after practice.
Yeah.
Practice had been earlier in the day.
2 hours earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. We see the beginning of practice,
okay,
and then we get them at the end of it.
All right. So they've changed the practice time up as
well. No, because we used to get them going out to practice.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
We used to get.
They've just changed the availability.
They've changed the availability time, right.
Yeah.
Availability time used to be pre-practice. Now it's post. So that hurts our bonding time here on the show.
We've got
enough time to
do
it.
Give us one for old time's sake?
Old time. Well, no, I mean, we'll try to do this every week.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So you'll try to come in for a little bit on Wednesdays here and help us out. All right. So he's going to grace us with his presence. I like that. That's good.
Wow. I wish I had a word of the day to describe that.
Children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
I got so many good ones, John. So many good ones.
You've been saving up.
I really have. I really was looking forward to that all off season. I I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to show John and Robin all these new words because I know she's listening, too.
Oh, she absolutely is.
All right. So
she's ready to hammer you, too.
I'll start off with one that has nothing to do with you know, sometimes we try to kind of relate it to the team, but this just has nothing to do with it. It's just a great word.
Mm-hmm.
Sybaritic.
Sybaritic.
Mm-hmm. A, can you spell it? And B, can you guess what it might mean?
Can you use it in a sentence?
That would be giving you the definition.
Oh. I'll say S-Y-B-O-R-R-I-T-I-C.
Close. You got the S-Y.
Okay.
Right. S-Y-B-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
One R. I-T-I-C.
Okay.
Sybaritic.
Okay.
And it basically means hedonistic.
Okay.
To be, to indulge oneself in luxurious pleasures of all kinds.
So we're not being very sybaritic here about the Patriots this week, are we?
Doesn't quite fit. No.
No.
No. I would say our weekend accommodations in Miami were almost
sybaritic.
Sybaritic.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
What do you think they'll be like in Minneapolis? Same.
Probably not so, because Minnesota doesn't have what we had down there, which was a nice beach.
A beach.
Warm weather. Yeah.
Well, at least you're not going to get 20 below, you know, in the middle of December.
No, but I'm looking at the weather forecast, and it's going to be highs in the mid-60s, lows in the 40s.
Wow.
So it's going to be chilly out there in Minnesota.
How about that? Well, better bring the jacket.
Oh, I'll bring him your jacket. Yeah.
All right. Good stuff, Big E.
So I'll try to stop in tomorrow.
Thank you.
Afterwards.
Great.
Because I think we have I think we're on the same schedule.
Same
tomorrow.
Schedule?
Yeah, we are.
All right, so you can come in for a few minutes.
Yeah, try to come in
before
for a few minutes.
Or you have to go right.
And give you another word.
Love it. Absolutely fantastic. Love it. Sounds like a plan. All right.
Bro.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks
no problem.
Checking in on practice.
Yep.
Eric Scalavino, Patriots Football Weekly. Be back again same time tomorrow. Let's get another quick break in here. We get right back to the phones. 855-PATS-500, web radio at patriots.com, the email at JRBroadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. We're talking Vikings. We're talking potential breakout players for the Vikings. And is there something good about Minnesota that you need to let us all know about, especially for the fans that may be traveling to Minneapolis for the game? One good thing about Minnesota. Come on, I know you got it in you. Viking fans, where are you? Ready? Set, go.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG. The power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our Declaration of Allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
God. Oh.
Serious, intense NFL films music.
I love it. That's just, you know, give me some good John Facenda music any day, right? Our friend Stephen in Killeen says, word of the day, Eric, pertinacious. Pertinacious. Anybody know what pertinacious means? I think it means pertinent and tenacious, kind of a combination of the two. That's what Eric was, so that's good. Thank you for sharing that one, Steve. Liam on Facebook, here on email says, let's face it, Brady has trouble throwing it deep. This is why teams can blitz him all game. If he can make a completion deep on those blitzes, then they'd stop doing it. Know who has a great deep ball? Jimmy G. Brady keeps this up. He may be replaced next year. Oh, man. Really? I really didn't think that after 1 week we'd see any of these. Maybe Jimmy G should replace Tommy B emails. Come on, man! Isn't that what they still do that? They do that segment still on ESPN? Come on, man! Cat in Chicago says, couple of my thoughts on the Ray Rice video. We spent a lot of time talking about this yesterday. Videotape was disturbing for me, not because of the actual blow, but because of the casual way he did it. as a psychologist, there were a number of things in the video that would signal to me this is not the first time he has done this. His lack of outward emotion. He didn't appear to be out of control. The taunting, intimidation. As they get into the elevator, he turns to face her. She flinches when it looks like he either spits or head fakes toward her. This all shows a frightening lack of respect and empathy. As you mentioned on the show, the way he drags her out of the elevator goes right along with this. The other problem I have with this story, what do people think happened in the elevator? Maybe I'm a pessimist, but I assume the worst. Wasn't surprised when I saw the video. Did people really think this was some sort of accident before they saw the tape? Fact that it was only after a video came out that this blew up says some very unfortunate things about our society. If there was a video of Vic electrocuting a dog, he would never have played another down of football, and the entire world would suddenly be willing to acknowledge that he is a psychopath. Yep, I said that yesterday too, Cap. No way do I believe the NFL didn't have access to that tape. Maybe the loophole is that one of their outside security contacts watched it so Goodell could maintain deniability. That's actually a pretty good point. And that is a plausible scenario, because I know there's so much disbelieving that the NFL really didn't see that tape before it was released by TMZ. And then she says, speaking of Penn State, did you see the NCAA enter their sanctions for covering the Sandusky thing up the other day? They were less than halfway through them. Yeah, but the NCAA, you know, and this is obviously an entirely different subject, Cap, but NCAA should never have been involved in that mess to begin with anyway. They were not judge and jury. You know, I understand why they sanctioned Penn State the way they did, because they thought the culture of football had gotten out of hand, which led to some of the vile things that happened on that campus with Jerry Sandusky there. But you're still throwing out the baby with the bathwater in that particular instance, and it didn't mean that the current people who were doing right and the kids who were doing right needed to be penalized for the wrongdoings of, you know, one sicko. And ultimately, the reason that they pulled back, I think, is because of that. Because they have made and taken extraordinary measures over the last 2 years to correct the wrongs that were ingrained within that campus and that society. They did the right thing. They did the right thing. Moving on. Greg says, guys, if you're the Panthers, what do Greg Hardy? What? Okay, I'm not sure I understand that one, Greg. Maybe you didn't write it correctly. This is one that I saw earlier, right at the tail end of PFW. Comes from John, who says, Rook stated that Brady's calf injury wasn't meant to be taken seriously. Andy said the exact opposite. Who's correct? This is from Johnny in L.A. Well, who do you think, Johnny? Come on! I don't think Andy was entirely wrong. But my whole point was, and that I wrote about this week and in the column and everything, was that you don't really know where injuries are concerned. Sometimes things are trumped up in order to protect the individual. And, of course, not to give away a game plan. I don't think I'd read a whole lot into it. Unless a guy really misses practice for something serious, I don't ever think I'd read a whole lot into injuries. The only injury report that you really need to be concerned with is the inactive list, and that comes out 90 minutes before kickoff on Sunday. Other than that, it's all conjecture. Most of it means nothing. Steve and Colleen says, time to turn the page. I want the Pats to start the game with the Vikings with a punch in the face, like the Vikings had slapped their moms and then continued to bring the pain. In the case of the offense, I would love the no huddle and getting after it. On D, bringing it with the 4-3 and forcing the 3-and-outs that we have left on the field in Miami. In short, I want the Vikings to hear the hunting horns and realize all too late that the hounds of hell had been released on them. Wishful thinking on my part, I know, but I see this as a gut check game for the Pats because the Vikings are certainly the real deal. Cav in West Palm Beach, Florida says, John, great to have you back. I'm sure I speak for so many Playbook listeners when I say we're glad to have you back on the air providing commentary. Thank you, Cavern. My question relates to switching from the 3-4 to the 4-3. We've all heard the saying about two quarterbacks. If you have two, then you don't have one. Starting to think that about switching between the two schemes. I'll admit I don't spend any time on the other teams, but I've never heard of Seattle, for example, moving back and forth. They line up and they attack as a defense should. Do you think the constant switching back and forth could contribute to the defense falling apart in previous seasons or like they did on Sunday? That's actually a very interesting thought, Kev. And I'm not a big fan of going back and forth either. I understand why the Patriots and some other teams love to have what should probably be better described as versatility, the ability to be able to disguise as well what you're trying to do so you cause the offense a chance to stop for a second and say, wait a minute, what are they doing here? Because I think it stands to reason. Logic would dictate that if you cause the offense to stop for a second and say, that's a split second that you've got an advantage and hopefully you can get a rusher to the quarterback or what have you. So I get the versatility part. You want to have guys also that are capable of playing different positions. So when they line up, you don't really know which way they're going. I get that. It's all about sleight of hand. It's all about not, you know, playing your best foot forward. It's all about, you know, trying to gain an advantage over the opposition. But fundamentally speaking, if you're 3-4 or 4-3, well, the Dolphins knew going in that they were going to run the football. They knew it. They expected the Patriots to come out the way they did. They guessed right. Now, if the Patriots had guessed and played 4-3, I'm not entirely certain that the Dolphins would have had as much success running the football as they did. They might have. But because of the zone blocking techniques and the way that they, Joe Philbin afterward described how you block against their front, the Patriots had one less body in the front coming up and playing, the line of attack. And because of that, that's one more cutback lane for the running back, in this particular instance, mostly Knowshon Moreno, to be able to cut back on. And that is what he excels at. He excelled at that with Denver. He excelled at that against the Patriots last year. He excelled at that on Sunday, cutting back. And because there was one more open space for him to come back into, it sort of exacerbated the problem. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not, but that's how I understand it. That's how I kind of looked at it. In this particular instance, I think the Patriots had a poor scheme and guessed or planned poorly for what Miami presented. Now, as far as 3-4 to 4-3, I actually kind of like having that versatility and being able to change things up so you cause the other team to guess or to prepare one way, and then maybe you come out another way, or if you prepare one way and they guess right, then you can switch. It's all about game planning, and it's all about adjusting, and that's something the Patriots did not do well on Sunday. They didn't game plan, and they didn't adjust. So I don't mind the schemes going back and forth. What I do mind is not readjusting when it's not working. That didn't happen on Sunday. Says, watching the defense fall apart on Sunday was tough for me because driving to the stadium, I couldn't help but be excited to see the D play, as we all were. Am I overthinking this, or is there something to that, my thought? Just pick a scheme that works with the players we have and play it. I think you actually might see more of that this week. I think we kind of feel like this is more of a 4-3 team than a 3-4 based on who's healthy enough to play on the front four. I'd like to see that more. But let's wait and see on Sunday. Some very good points by you. Very, very good points by you. All right, Kev, thank you. Back to the phones. Melvin in Tennessee, thanks for hanging on. You're in the playbook, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on, John?
Hey, Melvin.
I'm good, man. I feel like today should be a continuation of Mid-Pick Tuesday, as bad as we played.
Well, you certainly are welcome to do that if you like, but we'll also try to turn the page a little bit and give the proper respect here to the opponent this weekend, because I think you know, if you know anything about the NFL, that Minnesota's off to a hot start. They've got a very solid football team. I have all the respect in the world for their head coach and their quarterback, and their running back is one of the best in the game.
Right. And my nitpick is not really based on the game, but it's still a continuation. A continuation, really, of not only last game, but throughout the years that I've watched this team. And the scariest thing, like I said, I think I even said yesterday, is that, well, I guess to talk about, I know you talked about the Vikings thing. I think that right now, I don't know if I'm necessarily afraid of Patterson as much. I feel like Bill Belichick normally can take away one of your guys. You don't have to beat him another way.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, I'm still paying attention to, like, matchups like, I would imagine, Dennis versus, like, Greg Jennings, something like that, who had probably, like, 60 yards and a touchdown. I feel like hopefully that'll be a matchup that we can win, that they don't, you know, even like last year, I feel like Hartline, when Miami was tearing us up, and other people, it really wasn't the main guy, but, you know, you've had contributing factors that helping us, you know, causing us to lose. And I'm figuring matches that we should win. But with that being said, you know, throughout the years, I have seen this team tackle so poorly. Mm-hmm. And it's not really it was really an eye-opener for me because we turn on Thursday night and we see the Seahawks and we're like, wow, that is one, you know, defense. Mm-hmm. This is one defense. Mm-hmm. And we're excited for our defense. We're like, wow, I know we're going to be close to that. And then you turn on that TV, wow, and your wow goes to whoa.
Yeah.
We suck.
Yeah.
Like, there was an aspect of you had your hands on the guy. I don't care if it's a 3-4, 4-3, 5-2, 10-1, whatever it is. You had your hands on the guy. You just couldn't bring him down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a continuous. Remember last year against Buffalo? I never forget. Maybe it was last year against Buffalo with C.J. Spiller. They couldn't tackle him to save their life. And it was the same guy. It's alarming to me that I don't understand how this team can tackle so poorly. And now you have a kind of a more intense version of what you faced last week. Of course, you have a better running back. You have the same front. But I just don't – I would hope to think that still the New England Patriots should be able to beat the Minnesota Vikings. But I'm scared to death.
Yeah. Well, you first of all, let me attack a couple of those points, Melvin. Number one, you're right about the missed tackles, and the Patriots admittedly said we didn't play any sort of good fundamental football last week. We didn't. And that's part of the major reason they felt like they lost the game because they just got away from attendance to fundamentals. And, I saw a list earlier today of teams that missed tackles. The Patriots, I think, were credited with 9 missed tackles. And I think any team that had, all but 2 or 3 teams that had at least 6 missed tackles lost this weekend. So that, again, goes to early in the season when all things are basically even and teams are still trying to feel each other out a little bit. It's based on fundamentals and the completion of successful fundamentals, which is what makes the difference, especially early in the year. Patriots failed to meet that point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's just that contributes to, I mean, your overall defense, because like I said, several times when she had been lost to 3, you turned into, you know, +4. So there's a big difference in case you're in, there's a big difference in 2nd and 12 and 2nd and 4, so to speak, especially with the defense stuff that we're playing, because, I mean, there was a lack of pressure that I think that we've got to get. I was excited to see them, like, trying to create that. And the last point that I was going to make is that as far as offensively, I'm going to give them the credit of the doubt. The benefit of the doubt is saying that I feel like the offensive line will get that issue straight. I don't know if it's going to be Sunday. I pray it's going to be Sunday. But I feel like that issue will eventually get straight. The Danny Amendola and Tom Brady lack of connection, I feel like, will eventually cost you in the long run if they don't get, you know, better. Because, I feel like that's a big weapon or whatever that we invested in, the Patriots invested in, that isn't working. It's not going, of course, according to the plan. I feel like Gronkowski would do time and all that's going to get situated. Edelman be fine. But I'm still looking for that third guy. If it's Amendola, Dobson, Marina, I'm looking for somebody that I could depend on week in and week out. And I feel like, that connection that they were going to make that I was banking on, I feel differently about it now, honestly. And that might be a early call, but right now I just don't feel as confident with that, if they're going to be able to get on the same page, you know?
Well, I think that's a fair criticism. Until we see differently, I think that's a fair criticism. So I think that's something we'll bear watching over the next couple of weeks, especially. Especially right. if Danny Amendola stays healthy and is in the game.
All right. I mean, we didn't even get – and then you got to think. I said Gronkowski, Edelman, and Amendola. And which one of those – out of all those 3, all of them could get injured, to be honest, at
right.
any time.
Right.
You know, it could go down to 2 of them or 1. And that's how I'm going to – eventually, when you get down to the last – I know we'll be a playoff team. When you get down to those last couple of teams, I would imagine we'll be a playoff team. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets down to those last couple of teams, I mean, do you have enough chemistry with those 3 guys he has, you know, to get the job done?
Sure.
Because then you're going to be going against tough defenses, and they're going to hit you. They're going to hit you hard, and they're going to make it hard for you.
Right.
So.
Right.
I think that's my concern long term. But, you know, main point, you got to make tackles. You have to make tackles, 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 and you're gonna have to get on the same page on offense. Like, so you're gonna have to get another somebody's gotta get going around there. And I would prefer to be Danny Amendola.
Right.
I'm looking for him.
Good points, Melvin. Good points. Thank you for the phone call today. You got it. All right, got a couple of other guys here who are been hanging on for a while. I'll get to both of you. Here's Gary in Hamilton, Ohio. Gary, thanks for hanging in. You're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, Gary.
I noticed one thing about the Vikings with Patterson. He was a game changer. People are paying attention to Peterson, and last week, I mean, he had like over 100 and some yards rushing.
Mm-hmm.
Patterson did. I mean, so with us, we're not doing good in the run so far. I mean, that's obvious. We wasn't good last year. So now all of a sudden you got two threats.
We were pretty good late in the year last year, in the collective way, of course. But, later in the year, and a lot of that was attributed to, A, this type of back that had taken over in LeGarrette Blount, and, B, the offensive line was all on the same page. Now they've got a huge missing piece of the puzzle that they need to learn how to adjust to Logan Mankins not being there, and they need to learn to adjust quickly.
No, I think you misunderstood what I said. I said against the run.
Oh, I see. Okay, against the run. You're right about that. They were not good last year against the run, especially in the middle part of the season after they lost Will Fork and after they lost Mayo.
So now we got to worry about two people this week. It's like, okay, Cordell does that jet sweep, and he's gone.
Yeah.
And if we can't stop him, so then, your eyes are on Adrian Peterson, and then here goes this guy. If we can't stop Sean Marino, we definitely ain't going to stop him. Adrian Peters.
See, here's one of the things you talk about, that jet sweep with Patterson. One of the guys I think that could be very important in playing against that this week is a guy like Jamie Collins. He's got the speed to be able to hang with backs coming out of the backfield and cover, when it comes to, pass catchers. And I think we can all see that from him. But he was taken out of the scheme by Miami because they blocked downfield on him. How does Jamie Collins respond to this? Can he fight through the block? Can he not, fall prey to, a downfield blocking scheme so he can come up and make a play on especially something that may be coming to his side of the field with a guy like Patterson carrying the ball? I think he could be huge, or the Patriots could get burned one way or the other. I think he might be a tipping point this week.
Well, what's your thoughts? You think we're going to go back to a 4-3 this week?
I think based on what happened this last week, I certainly think you'll see some 4-3. I'd be stunned if you at least didn't see them give that look again, because now Minnesota's game planning primarily against what they got on film against the Patriots, and it was all 3-4. So if you really want to try to change things up, then you're going to give them a different look, aren't you?
Well, yeah, you would think.
Well,
my other question is, do you think the continuity of the offensive line is going to get better? Do you think it's still going to be this,
I would want to see
in and out.
It's a good point that you have, Gary. It's a very good point. I'd love to see them pick five guys and stick with it. Now, I don't know that will happen. I can tell you that today at practice, the same five guys that started on Sunday were running with the first unit today in practice, and that includes Jordan Devey. I'm a little puzzled by that one. So that tells me that maybe a guy like Josh Klein, who was on the inactive list, and I actually thought he might be a candidate to start at left guard, something may be amiss with him. So I'll be anxious to see the injury report when it does come out, and what his, did he practice at all? I didn't see him because I wasn't out there. All I can tell you is I know that the starting five was intact from this week. So because of that, maybe that tells you that they're going to try at least to get some continuity with that offensive front, such as it is. I think their best offensive front, even though he struggled at times this last week, is with Wendell at center, Connolly at guard, and then Vollmer at one tackle, Solder at the other, and Cannon at the left guard. I think that's their best, most solid offensive front. Now, I don't know if the coaches feel the same way. Because if they did feel that same way, I think we'd see that front. They clearly differ. All right, so let's wait and see if their different idea of what the front should be set at performs this week. That's a big key.
I know another thing in the league, you're only as good as the week you just played. Or I should say, that's what you are. You are what you just played. So with that being said, next week, I mean, we could have a total different Nick Pick Tuesday, because it could be totally, it could be better. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I really think that.
I think we all hope it is.
I think the heat, I think it's just, I don't know. I think we're going to have a lot better week this week. I really do.
I hope you are correct. I hope you're correct. Right. Gary, thank you very much for the time today. It is appreciated. Andy in Vermont, thanks for hanging on, Andy. You're in the playbook.
Hey, enjoyed listening to what everybody had to say, and I really think that Minnesota's climate and New England's climate is going to help the Patriots a bunch. The three to look at that, you know, Cass will be throwing and handing the ball off to with Adrian and Cordell. And you got to look at Kyle Rudolph. He's not really a known guy, but if you took a Gronkowski with a Pitta, mm-hmm. that's where you get Rudolph. But mm-hmm. he's got all the talent, and he's going to be one guy that you got to make sure you know, you might have to double-team like the Patriots did with Gonzalez last year against the Falcons just to take him out of the ball, you know, away from the ball. So,
yeah, I think that's a great point. And that's one of the reasons why I asked some of those questions today in the show, because I want to know what our fans' perception is on some of these Minnesota players that, frankly, we don't follow as closely as certainly AFC teams or even AFC East teams, you know. So I think it's good that we kind of identify a few of these guys to give us something to kind of target and watch for on Sunday.
Yeah, and on defense, I really hope the Patriots go back to a 4-3. And they need to stay explosive in the second half, which they kind of lost that last week. I think if they can pull a defensive tackle to Wilfork's right side, whether it be Volano, I don't think Volano plays well on the left side. Mm-hmm. I think you know, missing out on Kelly not being there, missing out on Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Jones is healthy enough, if he'll play this week.
Well, again, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing on an injury report today, specifically, Jones and Josh Klein, as I mentioned previously.
Yeah, and I think Jones and Milano actually play good with each other so long as there's a four-man front. I think the guys just have to be more aggressive up the middle and pressure Castle, pressure the quarterback, and we didn't see a lot of that last week. Chandler Jones and Rob, they can't get pushed too far outside. They've got to get inside as quick as they can and not create these big holes that the offensive line can to keep them spread for the running back, because you've got to shut down Adrian any which way you can. And you know, the guys like Chung coming back, he's a good tackler. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter. But like what one guy said before, a lot of missed tackles, a lot of guys, like three and four guys, hitting the same guy to bring him down. And mm-hmm. that's where you saw the other night. You know, when I watched the Cardinals play against the Chargers, it was explosive the whole game. Everybody was hammering everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it has to come to. Don't be afraid of, you know, a foul here or there. You just got to get to the guy and put him down. You can't always slide tackle a guy's legs out or anything like that. You've got to tackle him.
Yeah, and the other thing is you got to remember, the other thing is you can't go too high like Chandler Jones did a couple of times, you know. And that,
I know.
Both of those calls were crucial, absolutely crucial. Kept Miami drives alive.
Yeah, I know. I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, I think the climate is going to be the best for the Patriots right now, and hopefully they can just stay aggressive. And, you know, they did all right piecing it together. I don't believe the Cannon is the answer for left guard. I'd rather put Klein in there and keep, you know, everybody else intact. I think Nate Solder has to be comfortable with who's on his inside right side. I think Tom has to be comfortable with what's going on the front five.
That's even more important, Andy. And let me say this about the comfort factor. You're right. And Solder clearly was comfortable in having some guy named Mankins, you know, to his right as well last year. He doesn't have that. He spent a lot of the preseason having a guy like Klein next to him, and now he doesn't have that. So clearly there was some unsettled nature about the offensive line even going into the game. So whatever they end up doing, and if Klein can play, he needs to be in there. If not, then they need to stick with what they've got just so there's some sense of continuity. Again, I mentioned this yesterday. I'll repeat it today. Fact of the matter is that, you know, it's great that you have versatility in your offensive line, because then you got guys that can play up and down the line, and it really helps overall in your depth picture when someone gets hurt. But before you get to that point, you need to have continuity. The offensive line needs to operate as one. I think most that understand football and have been around the game of football for a long time know that that's a hugely important piece to your offensive success. They've got to operate as a single entity, a unit, and when they do that, it gives the quarterback more confidence. It gives the backs more confidence. It gives the receivers more confidence. It gives the linemen themselves more confidence. So you've got to be able to play together. And if you keep making substitutions in and out and rotating and blah, 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 I think that is absolutely the antithesis of what you're looking for.
That's right. Keeping Cannon at either right guard or right tackle, he's already got some of the technique there. He knows what that side, either position, needs to do or what they're going to do. But throwing them on the other side, I don't think it works. I just don't think it works. And I think you need to get somebody in there, maybe with the least amount of experience out of the, you know, to fill that role. So all the other four guys are set, or even your, you know, six man like Cannon or somebody else. I just think it's going to be so crucial. And I just hope, like I said before, I hope the defensive line goes back to a 4-3. Mayo is a great player, but I don't look at him as a middle linebacker. I look at him as an outside, and I think the five linebackers they have are all guys that can cover, but there's no, like, run stopper.
Okay.
There's nobody that's going to clog the middle and keep the guy from driving up the middle.
Okay. Fair comments, and those are huge factors for Sunday that we'll obviously be having to keep an eye on. Andy, thank you very much for the phone call. That's a good call today. Continue on the phones. Harley in North Carolina. You're in the playbook, Harley.
Hey, sir. How's it going?
Good.
I want to make a couple comments about the weekend's game. I think we'll do a lot better as long as I think the weather really messed up last week. I don't think we were in shape for the weather that was down there. But I think the biggest thing that's going to hurt us this week is if Tom won't not just throw to Edelman and Kronk, if he don't spread the ball around and start having confidence in his other receivers.
Okay. That's fair.
I think that's going to be one of the biggest factors, just because, I don't know, when he gets something in his head, he's just going to throw Gronk, Edelman, Gronk, Edelman, back and forth.
And then he ends up relying on these guys, and then it becomes a little bit more predictable. Well, you know, to that end, the other guys that he, you know, conceivably would want to throw to have to make sure that they're open, right? He's not going to throw it in there if he doesn't have confidence in the guy, A, to get open, and B, to hold on to the ball once he gets it in there. So, you know, whether or not that's Tom's fault for not getting the ball there or the receiver's fault for dropping the ball, you know, sometimes he does kind of get in a little bit of a rut, you know, with his, you know, favorite targets when push comes to shove. And he's getting pushed around back there, especially when he doesn't have the confidence in the offensive line to keep him clean and keep him off of the turf, which happened a lot in the second half on Sunday. So, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to go to the guys you know best, the guys that you think will be at least around the ball, and that's why you have to get rid of it early. It starts with the offensive line. If the offensive line gives him the time, he can find, you know, not just the primary guys, he can find the secondary guys as well. That's a huge key.
I'm kind of glad that we're getting off to a slow start this year. Maybe towards the end of the season we'll get hot instead of being a team that gets hot.
Well, you can always hope for that, Harley, but I don't think there's going to be anybody that's going to agree with you on that one, bud.
Well, I'd rather lose now than lose later.
I'd rather not lose at all, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'd rather not lose. I want to go 16 and every year. We all know it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's also true. That's
all. We all knew it was going to be a slow start when we traded Mankins. We all knew.
Well, I'm not so sure that we all knew it was going to be a slow start. I'll tell you again, they traded Mankins because they asked him to take a pay cut, and he said no, which was his right. So they you know, have a slot, if you will, for performance versus need versus what the position should pay, and that slot was out of whack. And so they tried to get it more in tune with what they feel fiscally is the right thing to do, not only for the team today, but for the team in the future. And it's one thing that you really can't argue about with these Patriots is that while they certainly are in the present and playing in the present, they always have an eye to the future. Now, whether or not they mortgage some of the future, well, that's still up for grabs, especially where this year is concerned. And we've seen them make some, you know, questionable moves in the past that we think, well, that may have given them a chance to, you know, be more competitive or even win a Super Bowl, and they still made the move. I would tell you that, you know, he just did not fit, you know, their mold, if you will, for that particular position. A, has nothing to do with what he meant to this team. I think someday he will end up being in the Hall of Patriot Place without too much of a doubt. He's probably the second best offensive lineman this franchise has ever had, short of John Hanna. Certainly the second best guard. I'll give you that. Been some pretty good tackles in there as well. And a couple of pretty good centers as well. So, you know, the only thing I can tell you is they also realize the need for some cap space in order to re-sign guys who are going to be of a more urgent nature next year. McCourty's one, and yes, Revis is another. And if
you can,
so, you know, they have to, the money has to come from somewhere.
But you can see that Brady's trying to build, or not Brady, Belichick is trying to build his team for after Brady leaves.
Yes, of course he is. He's been doing that for years.
Yeah, you can see, he already made the comments earlier this summer about he don't want to lose out a season to pick up an Andrew Luck. He wants to draft a quarterback and build our team. He don't want us to have a losing season the first year we lose a quarterback.
They don't want to have any losing seasons here. And I think that's to be commended. You know, do you want to be Miami? Do you want to be Buffalo? Do you want to be the Jets? Do you want to be the Colts? You remember when Peyton Manning left, that team went 2-14 before, you know, they got lucky and got luck. So, you know, all I can tell you is that the Patriots don't want to play that game.
No.
And they haven't. And they've been successful playing it the way that they're playing it. You can certainly criticize some of the things they do, but you can't criticize the overall effectiveness of being competitive, which they have been. They're in the discussion. Every year, they are in the discussion. Trey is in Memphis. Trey, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, Trey.
Well, you know, I'm trying to, you know, get a look at the bright side of things, man. We have a great team, man, and see, I think what's really burning, getting a lot of us upset as fans is, man, we see the potential. You know, we see the upside.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think that, you know, we expected total domination this past Sunday, and we didn't get the output that we expected. So it's like now everybody is going overboard, and I know, especially me, I mean, man, I was so upset. I didn't watch any more football that day. so a lot of it I watched was games that I recorded in. You know, I just went back then. I saw a lot of things on SportsCenter and NFL Network. I mean, but I really feel, man, that, you know, this loss is really going to light a fire under our team. So, I mean, to be honest, I wish we were playing tonight. You know, the quicker the better. But I think that Tom is going to have a better game. I feel that the defense is going to have a better game. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, we could establish get ourselves a defensive identity. I mean, what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think establishing a defensive identity is something that has to happen, and in a positive sense, because it was only in a negative sense that they established one this past Sunday. You know, the defensive front is going to have to stop the run. It's going to have to at least contain Adrian Peterson. I don't think you can, you're not going to stop him. I think Dan Patrick's adage was, you can only, you know, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. Well, that's exactly what they have to do, I think, on Sunday. Because if they can do that, then you're going to force somebody else to beat you, which is whether it's Patterson or the tight end or some one of those other weapons or maybe Castle's arm. And, you know, Matt Castle can run a little bit with the ball as well. So you're going to force somebody else. You don't want Peterson to beat you.
then I think that, man, we should at least, you know, put a little more effort in, you know, stick with the run a little more. I mean, you know, man, we, for some reason, I don't know why second and three, you know, second and three, second and six, you know, we just drop back. We just want to pass the football. I mean, we have to, you have to, you know, get in a offensive rhythm, both running and passing the football. And as, I mean, 53 passes, man, that's too much. That's too much for I mean, that's just too much. I don't care who your quarterback is. All right, John, man, have a good day.
All right, thanks, Trey. That's actually a good point again. 53 passes is probably about 10 too many, maybe even 15 too many. So what's the alternative? You got to run the ball effectively. If you can do that, then it's going to set the pass up. And, you know, that's an old football cliche, but it's also appropriate. Avi in Miami, did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, Avi, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Avi, how's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm doing well. I've just been listening to, you know, so most of the other listeners have been calling in. And, you know, I'm down here, right? And one thing that I do disagree with is that is this whole, you know, the weather has something to do with, you know, the way we played. When I got into the stadium, I was right behind the pass bench. I think I was, like, at row 7, right behind the 50-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there at 12:30, and me and my friend, we noticed, we're like, we're going to bait, because it was wicked hot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, man, by the second half, the clouds kind of came in, and it got breezy. And we were like, you know, we got lucky. So I don't think it has nothing to do with that. Even the past, the old line, I mean, I was looking at them, because I was so close. They were not near the fans. You know, they were just getting grilled by the coach. So I don't believe that, man. You know, it wasn't that hot. I've been to games down here. I think the Monday Night Football game that Pats came down here, kind of like similar time. It was way hotter, and that was at night. It wasn't that hot, you know. We actually thought it was going to rain the fourth quarter because it started to get breezing. You know, I've been down here for a couple of years now, and I know how it gets. I was like, oh, it's going to pour, and it never did. So, you know, my whole thing, looking at, I mean, specifically at the defense is, I don't think we have the personnel for a 3-4. I mean, as simple as that. Vince, I love Vince. He's my favorite player. But he's not that typical nose tackle that he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he'd be better suited in a 4-3 as a defensive tackle, maybe with, like, Easley or, you know, Volano in. Then you could have, you know, Rob Ninkovich and Chandler Jones, and you could substitute them with Zach Moore. But that whole 3-4, we just I didn't see it, you know. I didn't see it. I mean, between that, and like you were saying, the missed tackles, I think that's one of our biggest problems. You know, I don't think it has nothing to do with the weather. You know, that's just you know, my two cents.
And well, then, I appreciate that observation, because I'm sure there are a lot of people, so I'm sure you've heard here and probably read about, that thought that might have been a factor, that there did seem to be a little bit of a wilt factor, if you will, on both sides of the ball in the trenches later in the game when Miami really took it to them. You know, right. So if you're telling me that based on your observation it really wasn't that, then what was it in your estimation?
I mean, I don't think the game plan was great. You know, for example, like I know Mayo had maybe, I think he had like 10 tackles. Every time I saw him, he was tackling someone, but he was tackling someone 15-yard lines down. You know, 20-yard lines down. He was never in the backfield. I saw Vince in the backfield a couple of times, and boom, missed tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think. No Sean Moreno, man, looked like Marshawn Lynch, you know, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I like just breaking tackles, and I think that's one thing. You know, I think what you're saying, you know, the continuity between the O-line, I mean, that has to change. And then the run game, man. I think, looking at Vereen, I know White was inactive. I saw Bolden a couple times. I think Ridley didn't do too much. We have no run game right now.
Well, a lot of that is simply because the blocking up front was not on point. It just wasn't.
Right.
I think the personnel is fine, but I think, you know, the offensive line has got to do a better job of blocking.
No, yeah. I mean, I think it's just it was such a bad game. It was a snowball effect, you know.
Yes.
I think after the third quarter, they just gave up on the run because they had to throw the ball.
I agree. That's true. That's absolutely true.
You know, so I think it was just a bad game, as simple as that. You know, I've been hearing, like, I think I heard you guys yesterday, and people are like, you know, we're done. 8-8. I mean, you got to be kidding me, man. You know, you got to be kidding me.
There have been a few people getting hammered by that, and I agree. That's not exactly the way that you want to go. It's not over by any stretch. I understand the frustration. I understand fans, you know, wanting to, you know, slam the guilty parties involved here. But I think, yeah, saying that this team is only going to go 8-8, I think you're kind of jumping off the deep end.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, about Minnesota real quick.
Yeah.
My fear, other than AP and Patterson, for some reason, I mean, I know we got Jamie Collins this year, is Kyle Rudolph.
You're the second person to mention Rudolph. You're absolutely right. I think that's a good pickup.
Yep, that's my two cents, and I'll get off now.
Thanks.
I'll call later.
Thanks, Avi. Appreciate that, buddy. Good call. Good info right there. Let's go to Max in San Diego. Hey, Max, you're in the playbook.
My friend John, how you doing today?
I'm good, Max. How's it going?
Man, it's outstanding here, except I just got a couple of things to make it really quick. And you know me. I'm a retired Marine, and I pretty much say what's on my mind.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that.
You know, I'm also a loyal Pats fan, and most people who probably listen to this broadcast right now, you know, they can call me whatever they want. The fact of the matter is I came into the world wearing a John Hanna jersey.
So, I love it.
You know, they can talk all they want. My parents raised me on New England sports. I was born and raised in Lowell, Massachusetts, so it doesn't get any more. It just really doesn't get any more New England than that.
Yep.
So, what I have to say, they're not going to like what I have to say. So,
okay, fire away.
They know what they can do with themselves and where they can go.
Okay, fair enough.
So I'm going to just say it like this. So, those of you that are joining us that are somewhat, oh my Lord, new Patriot fans, turn your radio up right now. Everybody turn your radios up, because I'm only going to say this one time. Listen very closely. All you're talking about, we need to trade Tom Brady, get rid of Tom Brady, all this, do that. Really? Seriously? The man brought us 3 Super Bowls and took pay cut after pay cut after pay cut from his own personal salary that he's earned, by the way, to restructure his contract to bring in players that would help him get more Super Bowls. Now, granted, it hasn't happened that way. But after one game, you're jumping off the bandwagon? Let me ask you something. The next time you call John's show, maybe you ought to give him his address so I can send you a dress and I can send you a Chargers jersey, because you're really starting to get on my freaking nerves. Don't be cheering for my team anymore. Don't show up at our freaking parties no more. And you sure as hell better not show up at the stadium, because if I catch your ass there, God help you, because nobody else on this planet will. Guarantee you. Go cheer for the freaking Chargers. Go cheer for the Seahawks. Somebody else. This is not your team anymore. Trade Tommy. Whatever crack you smoke, and give me some. Could use some. Come on.
Yeah.
Either that or go study some football, because obviously you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I would have to concur. You know, last year, Max, during the season, I think, it was definitely me, but I think there are a couple of other guys in the media who made the note that Tom was missing a few things and seemed to be rushing some of his throws, and his footwork was mixed up, and he didn't seem to be terribly comfortable back there. And we allowed the fact that, not that Tom still wasn't one of the better or more effective quarterbacks in the league, but that maybe Father Time was finally starting to show its wear and tear, because quarterbacks don't last forever. And it was a complete bleep storm raining down on my head. Oh, he wants to get rid of Tom Brady. That's not what I said, because everybody ages, everybody gets older, and everybody there, believe it or not, there is a finite end. You can't go on forever, especially in a violent game like the NFL. But what you can do is recognize where your weak points are, strengthen them as best you can, use other areas that you're still good at in order to be effective, and begin planning for the future. And I think we saw the Patriots begin to go that direction this past offseason by drafting Jimmy Garoppolo. Did we not?
Yeah, and that's the thing that kills me, John. They can't comprehend that. Really? Seriously? You can't comprehend that. Are you serious right now? It's not that difficult. They didn't draft Jimmy so they could sit there and go, and, you know, let Brady run himself out just so they can cut Brady, have him go side with another team and come back and kick our ass later.
No, we're still talking 2 or 3 years on down the road here.
Right, exactly. I you got to figure somewhere along those lines that, you know, first of all, let me back up even one notch from that. Everybody's talking about, oh, you know, he can't survive in the pocket, blah, blah, blah. Well, let me ask you something. How would you feel if you had 4 or 5 max-sized trucks coming at you at about 90 miles an hour? What the hell are you going to do?
I'm getting the hell out of the way.
Hey, you see what I'm saying? No, but that's my question. That's my question to Johnny B. Good, whoever fair weather fan out there that keeps calling in or writing in the show and not knowing what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it really gets on my last nerves because it's like, okay, put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
You know, the O-line, obviously the game planning sucked. We all know that. They know it. Belichick knows it. You know, freaking Josh McDaniels know it. They all know it. That's why they're fixing it. They're not going to do that again. So
let's hope that that's the case.
Oh, I know they're going to do that. Come on. We all know they're going to do that. They're doing it right now. We all know that. My only thing about it is to them, pump the brakes. Just hold the hell on. Pump the brakes. And when they get ring four, I don't want to hear nothing out of you. Especially if they go and get it this year.
Good stuff. I love your optimism, Max. It is primo.
Hey, man, I know my team.
Attaboy.
I know my team, and I believe in my team. That's just how it is. We're not people in my family. This is before the Belichick Brady era. This is when Grogan was still our quarterback.
Dude, if I ever had to climb into a foxhole, I'd want to climb in with you.
Come on in. Ain't nobody gonna get you near you.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Love to hear from you again, Max. Thanks a bunch for the call today.
You too, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. Let me end up here with a couple of emails. Joe says, listening to you via TuneIn radio app on my phone, game breaker for the Vikings has to be Cordarrelle Patterson, the second coming of Randy Moss, he says. Also, what do you think of Pat's rookie running back, James White? I thought he had a great preseason, but late in the preseason, he faded a bit, and now I think he's down the depth chart. So I think White probably gets an opportunity, A, if he improves via practice, B, if one of the guys in front of him screws up, and right now he's got three guys in front of him. Robin in Alaska says, early in his media conference, Viking coach Zimmer said the Patriots haven't changed much. Later in the interview, he mentions how Welker is a good part of the team. He didn't say that, did he? Did he really? Did Mike Zimmer reference Wes Welker's being a part of the team?
I didn't listen to it. Was that on a conference call today?
Robin in Alaska just emailed and said that was part of it. He said that later in the interview he mentioned how Welker was a good part of the team. Now, what is a good part of the team or was a good part of the team?
It's a big if.
Yeah, yeah. And Robin says maybe the Patriots haven't seemed to change much to Coach Zimmer because he's watching film from two seasons ago. Well, let's hope. Let's hope he game plans for 83, although you could make an argument that 11 and 80 out there are kind of in the same role as 83 was at one time. That's funny. Pete in Augusta, Maine. I admit, John, Tuesday I let my emotions come out of my email. I'm usually pretty level-headed. Hope you forgive me, laugh out loud. Of course we do. We're all fans here. Emotions are supposed to come out. That's what makes it fun. He says, but I think they come out and play a lot better against the Vikings. Having said that, this will be a tough game. Bright spot going into this week's game is nobody was seriously injured from last week. What about the Vikings besides the three? I say it's a team that the unknown players play above what they're capable of playing, kind of like what we did last year. I think they're hungry. That's why I think it will be hard to game plan early for this one. Like you said yesterday, John, in-game adjustments are key. One thing about Minnesota, I have to say, Fran Tarkenton and playing in that weather. Yeah, Tarkenton was one of my favorite quarterbacks, too. That's a good call, Pete. Brooklyn Matt sends this. John, earlier I tried calling in, but the volume was too low on my crappy phone. So I'll email instead. Well, Matt, you kind of have to upgrade, big fella. First of all, welcome back. Great to have you around. Secondly, tell Snooty Scalavino to rearrange his schedule so he can put in his usual time on the playbook instead of just prancing down to give his ridiculous word of the freaking day. Well, he's going to give us the ridiculous word of the freaking day, too, but he's going to prance in here as well for you. Lastly, John, something I like about Minnesota, the chick rock band Babes in Toyland. Yeah! We all know and love Cat in Chicago, right? Well, there's Cat from Minnesota who fronts Babes in Toyland and owns rock's most primal female scream. Oh, good call, Brooklyn Matt. Oh, I'm loving that. James in Ellensburg, Washington, via Facebook, says, somebody to watch close on this game is the Vikings wide receiver, Cordarrelle Patterson, fast with a 4.42 40. They send him in motion, hand him the ball, which opens up the play action. I think we'll be fine, though, if we have a 4.3 front and can stop the run. We need to be more excited. Also, faster flying to the ball than last Sunday. That's definitely a given. Kareem also sends this. He goes, John, thanks again for the ad and the show. Primarily, I don't want to keep beating on the same nail, but we didn't show up with a heart in Miami. Reminded me with last year's AFC Championship game against Denver. And ironically, if I recall correctly, Brady missed that Thursday practice. Not to mention how BB and TB were kind of soft during their press and comments post-game. Got to bring it to the post-game, folks. Got to bring it. Can't be soft there either. I'd have felt better if they were a bit more angry. I think they were angry, but I think if you follow those guys for any stretch at all, you realize that that's kind of who they are, and they know when to turn it on when the TV cameras and the microphones are blazing in front of them. Hopefully that's water under the bridge, and the Vikings are a different story. Oh, and where is Danny Amendola? Actually, who is Danny Amendola? Okay, I think he's probably asking that one somewhat rhetorically, but I get the gist of it. We all hope that we find, you know, Danny Amendola, I think, this week against the Minnesota Vikings. All right, that's going to do it for our program today. Coming up next, Bob Soucy, radio voice of the Patriots. Flip on your microphone there. I got a question to ax you.
I was hoping I'd be able to skate by today.
No.
Last Sunday?
No. We like crossovers here on the program. Definitely like crossovers.
You're just not going to ask me that last email question.
No, right? Not really. Because, you know, hey, post-game comment. Anybody's entitled their opinion, post-game or otherwise.
Sure.
What were your thoughts on the game plan question? Because it seems like universally, most everyone thinks that was just not the right thing to do against Miami. And then, of course, more incredulously, that adjustments didn't seem to be made at halftime. What were your thoughts?
You know, regards first to the offensive game plan
Well,
in terms of offensive adjustments, John, you know, I really don't think that Miami did a lot of defensive adjusting in terms of scheme, in particular in the second half. It was more or less, you know, beating the Patriots up front. They manhandled the Pats up front. You know, one thing I will say, and even Josh McDaniels discussed this briefly in his teleconference call with reporters yesterday, is that he said they got into an element they want to stay away from. Mm-hmm. And I think what he was referencing was the imbalance between pass and run. And I thought that's one thing that stood out. When you look back at the series-by-series account of Sunday's game, and especially in light of a pass rush, a defense that's getting upfield, and especially when you're talking about a young offensive line, or at least pieces of that offensive line that are young and struggling to protect the quarterback, one of the ways that people have often combated an effective pass rush is to go to the running game. And, I thought the Pats, in particular, the first four series of the second half, while it was still, of course, either a New England lead or a close game before Miami really put it to bed late, had an opportunity to try to get something going on the ground. And I think it was a factor that Ridley, I think, ran twice in the first four series of that second half, that the Pats really didn't establish or even attempt to establish much of a running game. So from a game plan standpoint in the second half, I thought that was key. But in terms of blocking and adjustments in reaction to what the Dolphins were doing defensively, I'm not really sure that's what stood out for me. Defensively, you know, a lot of people are questioning the 34 right now, the use of the personnel. In concept, theoretically, the 34 is designed to actually be more effective against the run because you tie up the lineman with your front and you allow the linebackers
to make the plays, right?
Right.
Sure.
What I saw on Sunday in particular was the fact that really the Dolphins were controlling the line of scrimmage, but also the Patriots at times were either not filling the gaps or overrunning plays, and there were a lot of missed tackles. And you can't downplay or understate the running of or overstate the running, I should say, of Knowshon Moreno. He ran hard in that game, and he deserves a lot of credit for the effort he put forth.
I would totally agree. It was more their execution as opposed to anything else. They just played exceedingly well, I thought.
I thought in a lot of different ways, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Bob Soucy's coming up next. He's got a special guest ready to join him in studio. Matthew Slater's going to join us and join you in just a couple of moments here on Patriots.com radio. That's it for the playbook. Again, tomorrow, loaded show. We get more into the Vikings. Pro football guru Russell Baxter joined us. Dan Fouts also joins us from CBS Sports tomorrow. Same Pats time, same Pats channel, 2 p.m. Eastern. See ya.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from Patriots.com. Log on anytime for more news and more podcasts from your favorite team and Patriots.com.